time for Mac Geek Gab, and I've got our quick tip of the week. On your Mac, on my Mac too, if you're in a text input window, hold down on a key and watch. As like if you hold down the O key, if you hold for a second, above the key will appear all different versions of that letter, the letter O, with an umlaut and an accent and all the other things that you might want to use with an O. It's a great way to get to those special characters. Try different keys, because each key might have something different hidden behind it. More quick tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1043 for Monday, June 24th, midsummer. I don't know. Feels like the beginning of summer. I don't know why we call it midsummer or they call it midsummer, but that's the day, 2024. And welcome to Mac Geek Gab. We are, in fact, the show where you send in quick tips like that. You send in cool stuff found. You send in questions that hopefully we can answer for you. We string them all together into an agenda that hopefully makes some version of thematic sense, which is done to make it as easy as possible for each of us to learn at least 5 new things every single time we get together, so we can ring that bell when we learn something especially new or especially interesting or something that makes Pete want to ring the bell. Sponsors for this episode include ZocDoc.com/MGG. That's where you can go sign up for free, download the app today, and instantly find a great doctor and book an appointment. And also FastMail.com/MGG. That's where you can go to try FastMail for free for 30 days and get 10% off your first year. We'll talk more in depth about each of those in a little bit. As always, using ad scripts that ChatGPT has written for me. Sometimes it makes me say funny things, but it's how it goes. Here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen.
And here also in New Hampshire, where it's finally out of the 90s, both humidity and temperature-wise, the last couple days, it's Pilot Pete. Glad to be here with you guys. Dave, I want to add something onto your leading quick tip.
Sure.
So if you're on your keyboard and you long press, I used to think, I can't tell you how, the other day I was like, how do I find the long O sound? Because I was trying to tell somebody, here's how it's pronounced. Couldn't figure out how to get the line over the O. I always thought if you pressed and held the key, you'd start getting thousands of O's.
Right.
But you don't. You get, hey, here's your option to do it. Well, if once you hold down, say, the O key, and it comes up with all those various variations on the O, instead of having to take your mouse over there and click on the one you want, look underneath those. There's a little number. And if you want the one that's with number 7, the O with number 7 underneath it, then tap the number 7 and that drops it.
Oh, so I can stay on the keyboard?
Stay on the keyboard the whole time.
That makes perfect sense. I always wondered what those numbers were for. In fact, I that's not fair nor accurate. Yeah. I never even paid attention to the fact that those numbers were there. So I think if I probably had it, would have been like, hey, maybe try the number 7 on the keyboard. Now that you say it, it makes perfect sense. I love it.
That's why they're there. That's what they're there for. So, yeah, and I can't tell you what I did the other day. I didn't know that, and I wish I had. I went to a website and said, how do I make the long O sound? And I found somewhere that it had it, and I cut and pasted the O. And
yeah.
Well, that's just too hard.
That's a lot of work. That needs an internet connection, Pete. That's not being done on device, you know.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I feel like a caveman having to use the internet to go cut and paste to get that. So,
do Windows users still have to do the horrific, like, ASCII incantation, like it's like 27 keys. I'm exaggerating, but like
I think so.
I remember you used to have to like
the website was
option pound and then know the number of whatever the accented character is supposed to be. And yeah,
it was showing me like control option 3404, you know,
right?
You know, it's like, oh, come on.
Yeah,
so I think they still do. I think they're still set on ASCII.
Paul Conaway is bringing it back to the Mac, reminding us that PopCare, or PopChar, I always pronounce it PopCare because it's the first characters. four letters of the word character. Yeah, right. Who knows? Yeah. Whatever. But that app also is great for finding those kinds of things, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes for sure.
I believe that's a little free app, right?
I'm pretty sure it's free. Yeah, from Ergonis. I'll look while we're chatting here, but I'm pretty sure it's free. Yeah.
Well, you're doing that. I'm going to take us to our quick tip from Uncle Jamie, who says, add Shazam to Control Center. Like, I already did that. That's brilliant. The Shazam app can identify any song playing in the room or playing on your phone, or your iPhone in this case, particularly because we're talking about control centers built into your iPhone. You can put Shazam in your iPhone control center, and that's how I invoke Shazam anymore. You get the little S, the cute little S, the way they've done it.
Yep.
And I just pull up Control Center rather than look for the app and listen to music. And but that's a fun app. And I know you've told the story several times how it came about.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
That's just brilliant. That's just brilliant. It has so much.
And it's that built. Database is a monster. Built into iOS, like a version of that functionality. You can get more. You can see your history, I guess, if you add the Shazam app, which is free. Yeah, from the App Store, but that functionality is built into iOS. You can ask the S lady, what song is this? And it will invoke the same thing as the control center. But that requires A, that you speak, and B, that you speak loudly enough over the music that the S lady hears you and properly invokes the thing. So, I love having the Shazam thing in my control center. I think that's a.
Did Apple buy them, or is that database public domain? Okay.
Yes and yes. The database that was all built on the Gracenote database, and I'm pretty sure it still is. I can't imagine there's another database that would be better, which is a database of songs, and that's also what Pandora is based on. Pandora couldn't exist without Gracenote. That's how it finds songs that are sort of like the other ones that you listen to, and it taps into that. But the code base for Shazam is not in the public domain, and so it's an interface to the Gracenote database that does the thing that it does. And so Apple did acquire it. Yeah.
Okay.
Or it's a deal was made. I don't know.
I was looking at the Apple support page for this, and it says you can say, hey, S lady, Shazam this song.
Uh-huh.
And also that identified songs, even when you just ask her, are apparently saved to the Shazam app, and you can view that history if you have the control center thing by tapping and holding on the Shazam icon to quickly view your songs.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, the other thing, I don't know if it invokes Apple Music or what, but I've several of the times I've used Shazam, it'll pull up the music video and play it along with what you're listening to, including lyrics. So, but yeah, I don't know
there's a Apple Music icon or something, and it says tap Apple Music and the notification to open the song in Apple Music.
Yes. Yeah, I always get it in my what's it called? The Dynamic Island is where it appears for me.
Yes.
On that phone. But yeah, there would be a notification that you would tap. But I want to make sure we didn't lose what you were saying there, Adam, about going into Control Center and holding down, press the Shazam icon, and you get that history. That's cool. Huh.
Oh, yeah. We almost glossed over that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Little tip.
I like it.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
So I had a thing that I want to talk about that came up this morning for me. A little tip, because I was struggling this morning. So last night, our theater had their little awards thing, and my daughter and I got an award for helping with set build, basically a certificate.
Woo-hoo! And congrats.
She's moved. And so I wanted to send it to her. And I'm like, I want to scan the document. So I pulled out photos, and I'm in the kitchen, and I'm trying to take a photo of this thing so I can text it to her. And I'm getting glare and shadows, and I can't get it in the right orientation. And then I remembered I wonder if I scan this document rather than try to take a photo of it, if it will be better. So I opened up, well, first I opened up Notes because they're like, oh, I can scan from Notes. So I opened up the Notes app and hit the, you know, the dot, dot, dot and scan this. And lo and behold, it did the magic scan thing, did the, you know, identify the document, and it was perfect. And dropped it into my note. And then I was like, well, I don't really want it in Notes because now I got to deal with taking it out of Notes. And then I remembered, oh, I can go to Files and scan there right into my, you know, iCloud drive and then just send it to her. And so if you're struggling like I do with documents, I always forget, use the scan feature because it has adjustments to take care of things like shadows and lighting, and you know, you can convert it to black and white or grayscale.
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to can I prop this thing up against the wall, or like how do I get a good image, you know, clean image of this that looks like the actual document rather than, and then you end up with a PDF. So I was able to PDF it to her, and if she wants to print it out or whatever.
Nice.
So yeah.
Nice. Very cool.
Don't forget scan.
Yeah, and the Files app, it will scan to whatever folder you are browsed to in the Files app. And you find the scan functionality with the three dots and a circle in the upper right. Just in case you were...
Yeah, the dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, if you were having trouble finding it, it's up in the upper right under the dot, dot, dot. You mentioned scanning to your iCloud Drive documents folder, which of course is there. If you have other file services like Dropbox or Box or Synology Drive or things like that, you can add those. Most of those now have the capability of being added to the Files app. So you can navigate directly. You can use the Files app as your, you know, one app to rule them all and go and, you know, navigate, and you can drop shortcuts. Like if you navigate to a certain folder that you're going to go to all the time, you can long press on it and make it a favorite. And then those favorites will ostensibly show up in the favorites list, which is, if it's on your iPad, it's in the left sidebar. If it's on your iPhone, then you have to like navigate back to get to the list of all of your services and favorites. However, as someone who has attempted for years to make use of favorites in the Files app, I have to say that it doesn't always work. I have things that are favorited that do not show up in the favorites. And if I go to refavorite them, it says, do you want to unfavorite this? And it's like, well, sure.
Whoa.
And so I unfavorite it, and then I go back to it, and it's like, do you want to unfavorite this? And it's like, I thought we did that. But there's some confusion on at least my devices, and it's more than one device. It's happened, on several. I haven't like nuked and paved a phone in a while, but I think it did persist across this the last time I did. Like, I think there's something quirky about it. And I think it's more reliable with things in iCloud Drive than it is with things in, like, say, the Synology Drive app or Dropbox, you know, third-party drive. But you should be able to put favorites for anything in the favorites list. So I don't know. Maybe I should write into MacGeekab at feedback@MacGeekab.com and see if those guys have any ideas.
Hold on. Where?
Yep.
What did he say?
Feedback@MacGeekab.com.
Oh, okay. I thought he said feedback@MacGeekab.com.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's
okay.
Right.
Can I just comment? I want to comment
please,
on that tip on the Files thing, like putting all of your cloud services into Files, the Files app, because I did that. And what's really nice about that, and I love it, is now you have a unified like UI, especially if you have multiple, right? Yeah. So I've got Dropbox in there and Box and I don't know what else is. I just put everything in there. And so that's a great tip. So thanks for bringing that one up.
No, absolutely. And there are apps that will, like, I'm trying to think. Oh, I've been spending a lot of time in the Fourscore app lately, which is a very purpose-built app for generally for musicians to put charts for music and things like that. And it's you can turn pages, you can create set lists and all the things that if you need to do that, it's like right there for you. But I think it has Dropbox integration sort of natively in the app. And then it's got the Files app. And so I can pull things in from my Synology drive, even though the Fourscore app doesn't have a direct link to Synology drive. The Files app does have link to Synology drive. And so I just go into browse files and then I can go wherever I want because it's all just the system services sort of making the magic happen. And it works great. So, and that would work in any app that can attach to the Files app or the Files subsystem, whatever we're supposed to call
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And just to overload this topic, if you're not, into the Apple thing, being iCloud or, Apple's Files app, I'll throw a honorable mention out to Documents by Readle, which I used to use. Don't use it as much anymore because Files has gotten a little bit better and does more things. But if you're looking for an alternative, Documents by Readle is another place where you can centralize all your cloud services and documents.
Agreed.
All right. I'm throwing one in too then because it's in SetApp. Cloud Mounter is in SetApp, which mounts all your iCloud. All of your Google
Cloud services,
Dropbox cloud services. Thank you. My brain went park.
This is for your Mac. Yeah.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. All right.
I don't know if it's in the set app for iOS or not. I didn't even look at that.
Well, it couldn't be unless you live in the EU.
Oh, there you go.
Yep.
Right. I mean, although no, I guess that's not necessary. They have like, they've figured out ways for some iOS apps to be in setup for us, not okay. in the EU. So this is interesting. Have you used, do you use Cloud Mounter, Pete?
I do. Yeah. The problem is for me, it depends how your brain pictures things. It's easy to lose things because you've got it all mounted.
Right.
Where exactly did I put it? So. If you use it, you need to use it all the time because you'll wind up, if you don't use it all the time, you'll put something in your Google Drive and then not realize where, wait, it's not on my.
All right. So, go, Adam. We both have questions.
I was going to ask, I presume this is, it's mounting the cloud service. It looks like a mounted drive on your desktop. Okay. Yes.
And, okay. So that was probably going to be one of my questions. If it wasn't, I'm glad you asked it, Adam. But the question I have is, do you have to, let me think about the right way to ask this. So you install Cloud Mounter and connect right. it to your, whatever, Dropbox, right. Box, I assume it supports Google Drive, many different things, right?
Yes.
Do you,
all your Mac, all your cloud storage services.
Right.
So suppose.
But if I were to use Cloud Mounter, do I then also need to install the Dropbox app for it to connect to Dropbox? Or do you not have to use the Dropbox app? It just talks to Dropbox.
That's a good question. I will try to get the answer for you before the end of the show.
Okay. My guess is that it does not require you to run all of those apps.
Right. I don't think it does.
Yeah.
That's my recollection.
So assuming that's true, and I can't imagine it wouldn't be true.
Right.
It is true. So what this means is you don't need to install, you get to run one app instead of six apps if you want to connect to six different cloud services.
Right.
And that's huge. What also might happen, and I want to emphasize might because I don't know how Cloud Mounter is doing this, but I know that the way a lot of these things work, Dropbox on the free plan has a limit, I think, of two or three devices, clients connected simultaneously. I know with other third-party apps that third-party apps don't count as one of your three. It's entirely likely that Cloud Mounter also won't count as one of your three Dropbox.
So. I bet it won't. And then just down at the bottom of comments there, T. Andrew Caddick in YouTube mentioned that CyberDuck, which is a free FTP client, is good for mounting cloud services.
Love that.
I hadn't even considered doing that.
Love that. That's great. Oh, yeah. Okay. We're getting somewhere now. I like this. Yeah.
Right. This is how to mount your cloud services show.
Evidently. Yeah. Huh. All right.
I need to look into this more. But yeah, I think this is because, I mean, doesn't all this stuff use like web dev or FTP? I mean, I think these are all underlying technologies behind.
Yeah, I don't think people are completely reinventing the wheel on this. Yeah.
Yeah, CyberDuck is an FTP client, a free FTP client, as I recall. I used to use it a lot. I haven't used it in a while.
But it does do more. It'll attach, Dropbox, Google Drive, OneDrive, Amazon S3, all of those, and Microsoft Azure, and of course FTP and SFTP, which is what it was built to do initially. Yeah. Huh.
I use Transmit.
I'm sorry, I walked on you, Adam.
No, you're all right. I was just going to throw in that I use Transmit, and it's the same. I mean, they've got options for web dev and S3 and FTP and SFTP and you name it. That's the one from Panic, which I've used for years.
I think it'll, never mind. I'm not going to say what I was going to say.
There it is, 11 new cloud service.
Yep.
I use it every day, and I see the icons when I add a new thing. I only ever use it for FTP, but I know it'll do everything pretty much.
And hey, I've got a club to beat the dead horse with.
Yeah.
Forklift.
Okay. There you go. Sure. There we are. Yep. I don't know what part of that is going to be the thing that gets us canceled. We'll spend some time figuring that out. Yep.
Forklift, not fork flight, Dave. Sorry.
No, I was talking more about the club and the horse, but
No, I know. I just noticed. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
The animal cruelty episode.
Yeah, it's just not getting better. I don't think we're helping matters. Yeah. But here's Forklift. Forklift, does that also do all of the, yes, it does. Certainly Amazon S3, Google Drive, Dropbox, OneDrive. Okay, so they're all doing this. Yeah. All right. Fascinating.
And it might come in SetApp.
Oh.
It does. Forklift in SetApp.
All right, this is great.
I think it would be easier to list all the apps that don't get included in SetApp, right? I mean, that just...
It really is an amazing model. They have essentially cornered the market.
Other people have tried, but they are being super successful at it.
And I realize we're here, so we're just going to have this conversation. Prior to SetApp, the way indie developers sort of got their apps in front of people en masse with other indie apps was through these bundles, right? Where somebody would bundle up, they would work with, and there were a variety of companies that were doing it. MacHeist was one of them, but there were others, right? And there would be a whole thing, and it was like, okay, you buy into the bundle for $20 or something, and it starts with five apps. And it's like, but if 50,000 people buy into this bundle, we're going to unlock two more apps. And if 100,000 people buy in, we're going to unlock two more apps. And then they would ostensibly, I was never one of the developers, so I can't really speak to this, but, ostensibly they would take the proceeds from it. And there was a deadline. It was all... Right. I don't want to say false scarcity, but created scarcity, where it was like, okay, if you don't get in on this by, February 12th, then that's the day that it's over. But we'll do it. Maybe we'll do another one later in the year. Right. It was leveraging FOMO, and it worked. But what you were doing was buying either a license to each app. It sort of was different. Right. You'd get this pile of licenses, and some of them would be full licenses for an app. Some of them would be like, crippleware-ish, where you'd get 6 months and then it was like, oh, yeah, haha, now you have to pay us again or whatever. Like there were, and then SetApp really was to me, the evolution of that model, which is like, and I will tell you, MacHeist tried to do what they were going to call a rolling bundle. And they just didn't have the pieces in place to do it right. But it was clear that there was a business here. And then SetApp you know, was like, we know how to do a rolling bundle. And it turns out they did and still do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think you get any crippleware anywhere in SetApp. I've never found any.
Right. You know, right. Just, yeah. Their rules are good enough for the end user. I suppose is the right way to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing you'll have there, just to be aware of, just so we give the pluses and minuses, is, I mean, there is the times when a developer then opts out. So
yes.
Apps sometimes come and go.
Correct.
And they can.
Yeah. And they can. That's right. They're allowed to. Yeah. That's right.
But you generally still have the whatever version you had when that developer left. Like, it's not like they pull. I've never seen them. Like, I don't think they actually pull the app. But
oh,
you're just
really?
Not. You might have to go sometimes outside the app to get an update. Like,
oh,
if you
I
want
see.
The latest version of an app. So, like, you have version 2. They came out with version 3. It's not part of SetApp. You have to go get version 3 some other way. Yeah.
Got it. So, as long as you're still paying your SetApp fee, you get to have what you've been using in SetApp.
As far
it
as
just
I know.
Might not get upgraded. Oh, that actually makes, now that you say it out loud like that, you know, it makes sense. Yeah. Good. Cool. Fun. All right, folks, have you ever felt like your inbox is a haunted house of ads and creepy data tracking? Don't get caught in the spooky email trap. Switch to our sponsor, Fastmail. Look, I've been using Fastmail as my primary email for over 5 years, and it has been fantastic. Fastmail is an independent, employee-owned email provider that has been offering a premium inbox experience for over 20 years. No ads, no creepy data sharing. It's just a clean interface with features that value your time. For as little as $5 a month, you get a private inbox. And with their new multi-user plans, it's more affordable for your household or your business. Share custom domains, create private or shared calendars and address books, and manage personal and work emails securely. Plus, Fastmail has productivity features like scheduled send, snooze, folders, labels, and a powerful search bar. They even offer domain sales, setting up everything for you instantly. And if you need help, their human support team is available 24/7. Make email work for you with Fastmail. Customize your workflow with colors, custom swipes, night mode, and more. Try Fastmail free for 30 days and get 10% off your first year at fastmail.com/MGG. Again, make email better for you with Fastmail at fastmail.com/MGG. And our thanks to Fastmail for sponsoring this episode. All right, folks, are you the one in your friend group who loves to treat yourself? It's okay. Look, I do it too, right? Whether it's that extra 10-minute foot massage at a spa. If you've never had a foot massage, go get one, right? Or getting your coffee from that fancy shop downstairs. I know a lot of you do it. I'm not a coffee person, but if I were, I probably would. Or maybe opting for extra legroom on a plane. I mean, yeah. Why settle for less? Well, why settle when finding a doctor? Enter our sponsor, ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book tens of thousands of top-tier doctors, all with verified patient reviews. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. And that means with ZocDoc, you can book the doctor you want immediately. No more waiting on hold awkwardly with a receptionist, right? All these docs have verified reviews from real patients. We're talking about top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. You can filter for doctors who take your insurance, are near you, and treat any condition you're searching for. And get this, the typical wait time to see a doctor booked through ZocDoc is just 24 to 72 hours. You can even score same-day appointments sometimes. I've used ZocDoc to search for doctors, and you can too. It's awesome. Go to ZocDoc.com/MGG and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/MGG, ZocDoc.com/MGG. And our thanks to ZocDoc for sponsoring this episode.
All right. Well, we're going to go on to questions now. And Dan writes in. He says, "Hi, guys. I have a 2019 Intel iMac." Man, Dan must be a Cro-Magnon man. I don't know. Still using Intel. All right, I'm sorry. I'll quit doing that. He says, I'm wondering if I have a right to be a bit disgruntled that a company that is so dedicated to the environment doesn't allow us to buy a Mac Mini that at least allows me to reuse this display. What a waste to even have to take them to take the energy to break down the iMac for recycling. Just curious. So he wants to use his iMac as a display.
Fascinating. That's not the question I thought you were going to ask.
It's Dan, right?
Well, sure. Yeah.
Can I use my 5K iMac as an external display?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which would have, it's all fine. That would have been the first question to ask after we finished the whole backup block, but it's all good. The answer, Dan, is that I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I would love to use one of those 27-inch 5K displays that I have left over for something. And you're right that there's no like Apple defined way of doing this with the 5K displays, at least none that I am aware of. With the 5K, you could do it with the smaller ones, but not the 5K ones. And so, but there is Luna display, which I think might be your answer here. And it Luna display is a combination of software and hardware that does exactly what you want here, and it creates this opportunity for your external your standalone Mac to be an external display for something else, and it'll do 5K resolution. As long as your Mac that's running it is Big Sur or better. And it makes it all work. So I think that's the answer for this, Dan.
Yeah.
I don't know that I have any other thoughts. Adam, do you have thoughts?
No, I mean, the only other option is to do this with a pure software solution, right? You can get basically remote access apps, you know. So you could even use the built-in screen share, right? Basically turn it into, well, if it was a desktop Mac, we call it, you know, can mirror the screens. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yep.
Like there's software apps to do this. I think Luna's the best one because it's a proprietary, I think it uses, you know, proprietary wireless. So it's going to be less latency. And the problem with doing any of these things is there is going to be a little bit of latency. It's not like, you know, plugging in a monitor,
right?
No matter what you do,
right?
It's doing work, but with their hardware solution, I think the trick with Luna is they fine tuned that little dongle, you know, to optimize just doing the display mirroring or display extension or whatever.
Yep,
you're wanting to do.
I'm looking here. I know that in the chat, Paul Conaway said that Luna works great if both devices are connected via Ethernet. Wi-Fi is barely usable. I thought that Luna used, like you said, its own thing. But clearly, there's more to this than I understand. So tugging on this thread that Paul Conaway brought in, even if your Macs aren't connected to Ethernet for their network connection, I wonder if you could just run an Ethernet cable between the two Macs. You can always have two networks set up on a Mac. And so creating that, you know, private network between those two computers, which probably DHCP would take care of because it would do self-assigned and then everybody can see everybody. That might be the way to do it. I don't want to say I'm pulling this out of thin air, but I'm certainly doing this without having researched if there's some reason that it couldn't work. But interesting. Yeah,
I don't know what happened because there was, I wish I could remember which model it was, like a 2017, I think it was a 2017 iMac. Apple had an iMac, one iMac that I think actually could be used as an external display.
Yep.
If I'm remembering right.
Yep. Well, it was when they went to 5K that target display mode stopped being a thing that could be used. Yeah.
Yeah. This wasn't even, was that how it was powered? But like, I thought it actually had a connector on it, like a, a monitor connector.
You could connect to the, I want to say the like the display port or the we would call it the Thunderbolt 2 port or whatever.
Okay, yeah, that's what I'm probably remembering.
What I think you would connect to. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah,
they supported it on like one model and that was it. It was like, yeah. I don't know why it went away. Yeah, it was the 2016 iMac Target Display Mode. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was once 5K came in, they were like, well, we can't, like, we have no way of connecting a 5K display, so we're not going to bother. And that was the end of that.
Really?
At the time, that as I remember it, it was like, well, there's no, you would have to use like two Thunderbolt ports to do it the right way. I don't know. There was some Apple spun the whole thing. I don't know.
Of course.
It was just Apple. Yeah. While we're on this topic, Professor Josh commented that, it kind of along the lines of what you were saying there is that Jump Desktop could be used as a way to control an external monitor. He says, you guys mentioned Jump Desktop as a tip recently. He says, if Jump Desktop is, you know, for remote control. He says, the problem is that I have a 2015 27-inch Retina iMac, so 5K, that functions very poorly as a computer anymore with most things I try to do on it. However, it still has a big, beautiful screen. Apple does not allow Target Display Mode, but I have found that Jump Desktop works very well to broadcast from my newer MacBook Pro over to my iMac. I use the iMac's keyboard and mouse and run Jump Desktop full screen on the 27-inch iMac. The app there doesn't demand very much. Sound from the MacBook Pro comes over as well, and there's very little to no lag, even for playing videos. I get best results with wired Ethernet to both computers, as we discussed. So that's an interesting, perhaps, use case here as well.
Yeah.
The trick there, and now we got to put on our hats, our thinking hats, not our I don't know, not our dunce caps, and talk about it. Doing that, you could certainly mirror the screen, right, via Jump Desktop or any of the screen sharing kind of, you know, apps. But is there a way, and I think there is, to tell our Macs to create a second virtual screen for a monitor that doesn't exist? And I seem to remember, as I'm saying it out loud, I seem to remember there was an app, and it was mostly created for headless scenarios where you would set up a, sorry, I'm super distracted now thinking about dunce caps on a headless Mac. Yeah. Because that's a funny image.
There you go.
But it was for people who set up like a headless Mac Mini, headless meaning no monitor, and you know setting it up as a server or whatever, and then you'd want to connect to it. But because the machine was headless, it would show you like a 1024 by 768 screen. It was like, okay, well, this is cool, but I feel like I can't do anything on it because I can't make windows that are big enough, you know, to do all the things. And so there was some way of telling the Mac, hey, yeah, you've got your no screen, but it's okay. Add another virtual screen. So I don't know. Because otherwise you're not going to be using the full 5K of the thing. You could use the full 27 inches, but like,
you're not going to get the 5K image, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So although a MacBook Pro, what's the resolution of a MacBook Pro in Retina mode? Like, it, depending on the size of the MacBook Pro, you might get close enough where you're okay, but it's still mirrored. You're not using two separate displays.
Right.
There it is. Mike Seidel in the YouTube chat says, I have a little dongle that mimics a monitor, and you can get them from OWC. So maybe this is the deal. You put the dongle in on your MacBook Pro in this case, and then screen share to that screen so that you have the thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've got one. It's a little HDMI plug that, you know, dongle that goes in there. I've done that with my Mac Mini to run it headless, so I have more options on the resolutions that I can go to. And I'm not sure that it's given me all the resolutions that I want, but I bet it's close.
Well, let's take a look, because I think I found it. I found the HDMI emulator.
Oh, okay. So it can go up to 4. I see. That's the 4K display one there.
Yep.
In the one that you're showing on the screen. I'm not sure that mine even goes to 4K that I have in my Mini.
Okay. Yeah. But that's interesting. You need to be able to plug. It is an HDMI plug, so you'd need a Mac with an HDMI plug, which I think the MacBook Pro has. But you could also, you could dongle to the dongle, right? If you don't have an HDMI port on your Mac, you could get a dongle that has an HDMI port and then plug this dongle into that dongle, and then you're living the dongle life.
Right?
Oh, I don't know. Dunce caps and dongles and... Yeah.
And Bruce Minozzi points out that a bunch of other sources, dongles have different resolutions. So you got to make sure you've got one that has 4K or 5K.
My gosh, you got to have the right dongle to plug the other dongle in.
That's the issue that that it tells it, hey, go ahead and broadcast to this. Because like I say, I have one in my Mac Mini, which I run headless, and it's been great. Because I use it for when I'm overseas, I use that Jump desktop. And I try to get it to give me YouTube TV, and the DRM kicks in, and I can listen to the sound because Jump Desktop transmits the sound, but it won't transmit a picture remotely, even with that dongle in.
Yeah. Got it.
Jerks.
You know, it's how they are. It's, yep. Right.
So
go ahead, Adam.
So super dumb question. And I just tried this. I think you can. What about built-in screen mirroring with display extension?
Oh, this is why we have you here, Adam.
Quit that.
That's a thing? I didn't even know this was a thing. Like, you took my breath away, obviously.
I had to get out my work MacBook Pro because I wasn't seeing another Mac on my network with a screen, but I opened up that and now it's behind me, which is really inconvenient, but I have Safari up on that, and then I now have three screens basically,
and you can drag a window from the Mac that you're on over to this other Mac.
I think my notes are actually over there now.
You might want to bring them back. Okay, yeah. I'm trying to find an Apple support article about this, and
I couldn't find one. It keeps wanting to bring up screen sharing.
Yeah,
but yeah, you can mirror and extend displays through, you know, I don't
through
know
through screen or whatever.
You're going to have latency issues, like video is probably not going to be great. Like, but if you're just doing documents and stuff like that, like it's a possibility, I think.
Yeah. Well, any of these, you're going to have latency. Like, you're not going to be playing games across this. It's certainly not twitchy games or whatever. But, I wonder, the reason I wanted to find an Apple Knowledge Base article was, well, A, to give people instructions on how to, like, do this, but also B, to see what, like, minimum Mac OS version I would need to run on the, we'll call it the target Mac. Right. What is it? Is it called screen extension?
It's called screen mirroring, and I think it's just part of your display settings.
Yeah. No, I see
like
this.
It
like
it just shows up as a display.
Right. I'm definitely gonna break things as I'm looking for this. But yeah, you go into displays and system settings. You hit the plus button. And you get mirror or extend to, and I see my Mac in the office right there.
And you can move them around in your display settings and arrange them and change the settings. And
yeah, of course. Yeah, because then it's a thing. Extend or mirror your Mac desktop. Wait, did I find? No, I found the same freaking article it keeps bringing up for me. Google is failing. Yeah. This is so fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. I just know it worked.
No, it does work. I just want to find a knowledge base article, but I'm going to let go of that. I'm not going to be hung up on that. So T. Andrew Caddick believes we need Sonoma or later. I don't know what that means anymore. I think it's I think it's
starts with an S, ends with an A.
Yeah, yeah. Supercalifragilistica.
Sayonara.
Yeah, sayonara. Yeah, exactly. That's macOS 14. That's the current version of macOS that's correct. Not in beta. Yes. Okay. Thank you for that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely works on that. I thought this feature existed earlier.
It might.
Much earlier, but yeah. I may be wrong. Huh. Both my machines are on Sonoma. It obviously just worked. Like, I had basically three monitors.
Yeah.
And one of them was my Mac. So.
Right.
Mac.
Right.
And I could have gone to my Apple TV, too, if I wanted to do that and extend it to that.
Yeah, right. That we do all the time. Right.
Yeah.
Huh. All right. Love this. All right.
Are we going to get back to backup questions?
Back to backups?
Yeah. So I skipped an entire section of the agenda just to throw you guys off.
Thanks. Yeah. I was like, what is he asking? This sounds familiar, but it's not what I'm expecting. Is my dunce cap still on?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I do. I'm here
to help. I know. Yeah. It's great. Yeah. Yeah. You going to take us to Jeff? Anytime you're ready.
Am I going to do it? I can take us to Jeff.
Anytime you're ready.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Hang on, Jeff. what's the simplest way to back up? He says, hey, guys.
Hey.
I run a small local repair shop for phone and computer repair, and I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for a customer that I'm currently working with. He is a semi-professional photographer, but he really doesn't have a backup strategy in place. Currently, I'm working on saving about 700 gigabytes of pictures from his old MacBook that he forgot that he even had. Whoa. Currently, his workflow is to use Apple Photo for everything, and he creates new photos library every year on a yearly basis with all of the photos for that year. He is not using iCloud Photos, so all of his pictures are only on his MacBook. Obviously, this could be disastrous. Oh, yes. I am currently working on a backup strategy to suggest to him. He is not the most technical person in the world, so the simpler the setup, the better. But I would also like it to be a robust solution for him. He does have a home and office that are physically separate. So what I was thinking was suggesting a Synology NAS at each location and then somehow syncing the two together. It would be good for him to be able to make a change to either one and then that change be replicated on the other. Any ideas on making it seamlessly work with this Mac? Unfortunately, I have not yet gotten a chance to dive deep into the NAS world yet, so my experience is minimal in this area, but I think it might be right for him. Any other ideas would be great. Thanks, guys. Jeff.
Yeah. So the simplest way is going to be for him to pony up for the monthly fee and do iCloud Photos and store his photos there. It's going to be with 700 gigs, it would be $10 a month, I think, would be enough to get a terabyte. You might be able to do it for less than that. I'm not sure. Yeah. I know that syncing your photos to the cloud is not officially a backup, but by golly, it's better than what's currently happening there, yeah. Which is that they exist nowhere else. So yeah, that would be my recommendation. Now, I realize he's not on that. He may have security reasons or personal reasons for not wanting his photos on somebody else's storage. And of course, that would preclude iCloud Photo Library. So moving past that, I would say Time Machine would be the next best thing. And maybe even an also along with that best practice. Like Time Machine is there to do exactly this. And again, it hits the bar of simple because, as I've always said, I love the idea of backing it up to a Synology. The Venn diagram of novice users and Synology users has no overlap. And I don't mean that novice users can't use a Synology. What I do mean is that once you start using a NAS, you are no longer a novice user. And so you have to sort of buy into learning a new operating system, learning a new interface. Like, that's just going to be how it is. And it's fun. Don't get me wrong. We talk about it here all the time, but it's not the simplest path, nor is it necessarily the most cost effective. Although if you're going to do other things with the Synology and this you get as an added benefit, then maybe, you know, dollar cost averaging, you get yourself there. But I don't know. Them's my thoughts. Adam, you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I actually really do. And I think the trick here is, so a couple things to know. If you go the iCloud Photos route, where he's going to run into a problem is with his workflow, which is currently creating a new iCloud or a new photo library every year for his photos, because iCloud Photo Library will only allow you to have one system photo library that goes to the cloud. You can't have multiples. So he'd only have his current year, or he'd have to change that workflow. I think you're absolutely right on the time machine path. Like, that's the easiest way, because he's got these individual photo libraries for every year. They're just a file on his computer that will get backed up by any local backup system he wants to put in place. So Carbon Copy Cloner, it could be a directly attached NAS or drive, you know, like RAID drive is what I want to say, not a NAS, but directly attached RAID. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Whatever you, just a huge, you know, 8 terabyte hard drive or whatever, you know, like lots of options there. And then, you know, it could be either he could literally have the library on that drive and then backed up someplace else. I think that's where he's getting at with this home office NAS thing, is I would assume the assumption is he puts all his photo libraries on the NAS at the office, and you could have it synced to the NAS at home, right? But like you said, that'd be kind of a complex setup, it sounds like, for this guy. So I like the idea of just, you know, have a regular clone to backup to another drive and just move those libraries over. You can automate that. You could use a tool if you wanted, like ChronoSync, to do that. You could simply set up a Hazel script to just copy, you know, the libraries over. I mean, there's like a million ways you could do this to get the libraries from, you know, in two places locally without having to do a lot of muss or fuss.
Yep.
And, oh, sorry. And then the last thing on that is my other recommendation is take a look at Power Photos from Fat Cat Software, which is specifically software that's easy to use, designed for managing multiple photo libraries.
I love Power Photos. It is. If you're doing anything with photos, you know, other than just like they're in my library, but if you need to do copying or merging photo like all of those things, if you're managing multiple libraries, either long term or even short term, Power Photos is I agree.
Yep.
All right. Sandro had a related question that I think is worth sort of digging into while we're here. And the basic question is, does Time Machine back up my iCloud Photos library? And the answer, because I even said, like, get iCloud Photos library and also Time Machine. However, Time Machine only backs up what's on your Mac, what's actually stored on your Mac. So if you have iCloud Photos set to optimize storage and it's all syncing up to the Mac, to the cloud, and you only have a subset of your photos local, that subset will get backed up. If you have Download Originals to this Mac set up, then that will get backed up with any of your local backup solutions, as long as you tell it to back those up or tell it not to exclude those. And there's some world where Time Machine excludes certain things in the cloud by default. I know it's there was some question a week or two ago, or a comment a week or two ago, where documents was not all being Time Machine backed up, but I think that was in an optimized storage on this Mac scenario, is if I'm remembering correctly. So yes, it will. The short answer is yes, it will, as long as the photos are actually on your Mac. Yep. And you tell it to back them up. Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah, that's what I got. Adam, are we good on this one?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Then we'll go to John here, and I think this is a good one for you. John says, it's kind of in our backup section here, as I was reading Apple's document about the desktop and documents folder, there it was a section in there that says, if you want to store your files in iCloud Drive and another cloud storage service, you can keep copies of your files in both, but you can't keep folders from a third-party cloud service in iCloud Drive. Right. You can keep your other cloud service folders in a different place on your Mac, like the home folder. If you already use a feature from another cloud provider that syncs or manages your desktop and documents folders, you need to turn it off to use iCloud desktop and documents. John's question, based on that, is, I use Backblaze and Time Machine as backup solutions. Does all of this mean that my iCloud Drive sync documents will no longer be part of my Backblaze backup? Does it impact my Time Machine? Sorry if I'm the one confused. It's a mess, and I want to make sure I'm doing it right. Thanks, John.
Yeah, and it kind of relates to what you were saying earlier about the setup, right? So this is I had to read this a few times because I'm with John. This statement from Apple is a little bit confusing. And so what it might sound like is, like, you can't use a service like a Dropbox or some other cloud service thing and have your stuff backed up. But what it's really saying, if you read it, is don't have your cloud service, like, don't put your Dropbox folder in your desktop and documents folder. It needs to exist outside. It's a separate service, right? And so that's what it's saying here, you know, because then things will get wonky because you have one thing that's trying to sync things that's syncing to another thing, and you're going to get all out of whack. So don't do that. But you'd have to deliberately set up these services that way, like Dropbox and Box and Cloud Drive, that doesn't put something in your documents folder. It sets up a separate part on your drive. So then in terms of, you know, is your stuff going to get backed up to Backblaze, Time Machine, all that stuff goes to what Dave just said earlier. As long as those files are on your Mac, those services can back them up as long as you don't exclude them. So, you know, if you have Dropbox or Box or whatever cloud service set up to always keep copies local and not just optimized to the cloud, then yes, as long as there's a physical local copy on your drive and you're backing up that drive and not telling it to exclude it, you can back up with Backblaze, you can back up with Time Machine. That's the key. Yep. Just know that you have actual copies of those files, and then also don't inception your cloud services, like, don't you know, don't put your Backblaze in your iCloud drive or your Backblaze too, I mean, but don't, you know, put one cloud service inside another cloud service in terms of, like, where the storage is going, because then the universe will implode.
A cloud within a cloud.
Yeah, I yeah. love that. That's the money quote right there.
Right.
Don't inception your cloud services, folks. It's great advice. Like, it
that
says
cloud
it all
will
right
not
there.
Have a silver lining.
No. Yeah, that cloud will not. All right, we got one more in the backups realm here.
Yeah, Mr. Andrew writes in. So Andrew wrote in, he says, hi, Dave, Adam, and Pilot Pete. I reformatted an external Samsung T5 SSD by my own fault and not paying attention to which drive I was reformatting, as I had two identical drives attached to my 14-inch MacBook Pro running macOS 14.5. Sonoma.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah. It was sayonara, I think it's right.
In this case, sayonara, because yeah. Is there any hope of me recovering data, approximately 236 gigabytes of data, after reformatting it? Nothing else has been done to the drive since this boneheaded move. I ran disk drill on it and was not able to find anything. I want to attempt a pass with data rescue, but thus far it does not see the external drive, even though it shows up in Finder. I have an old backup of the data, but thought I would use this experience as a way to teach myself some data recovery skills. Any guidance would be appreciated. Ouch.
Yeah, ouch. I mean, disk drill.
You know, deleting's one thing, but format? How?
I mean, a format, like, if we look at what how long a format takes,
yeah,
right, it happens very quickly, unless you tell it to do the erase pass first, which don't do that on an SSD. This is not going to end well. That will... It doesn't actually erase everything. It just rebuilds the table of contents, if you will, right? So the data is, at least in theory, still there, or some version of it. And Kiwi Graham points out that Disk Utility doesn't let you do an erase pass on SSDs, so you'd have to really go out of your way to do this. So the data is still there. Disk drill, you know, would have been my first thought. But if it's not built to do this scenario, then it's not going to work in this scenario, right? The other one to check would be Stellar. It is, again, a piece of software. You can, with most of these, the way it works is you download the software for free. It shows you if it can recover it, and then you pay to unlock the software and get your data, right? Which there is actually, it's kind of nice. I mean, I know it seems like they're teasing you, but they're letting you know if their software has a chance of working before you pay for it, which right. I kind of like that model. So I would try Stellar. And if not, then like is Total Rescue, that was them, right? It was the company that
he mentioned that Data Rescue, which is what I used to use
Data Rescue,
back in the day.
Yeah, right.
He was going to try that too.
Yep. Yeah, so that would be, yeah. But does Data Rescue, is that, like, is that still
yeah, ProSoft
thing?
Yeah.
Like, is it up to date for our...
I think so.
Okay. Yeah, then, you know what? If it is, assuming it's up to date for, you know, the current version of macOS, which it sure seems like it is, then, and again, they offer the free download. Yep. It does say retrieve lost files from SSD is listed in the long list, which is great. And also restore lost data due to, and the list includes, and in fact starts with, formatting. So this would be download the free version, see if it shows. In fact, it says their free version gives you 1 gig of free data recovery. And if you want more, then you buy the $79 license. So, yeah.
Or come up with 239 new user IDs to get them all at once.
Well, I mean, you could. Yeah. I'd pay the $79, but
yeah,
you know, that's
right.
Just
it's
me.
A lot easier.
Yeah, yeah. And then beyond that, the thought would be, I'm glad to see this still exists. I wasn't sure what was going on with ProSoft. There was a period of time where they were kind of in limbo, but it seems like they're out of limbo, which is awesome. Beyond that, it would be sending it off to a professional data recovery service. So would be, you know, the other way. But I would say that that it's there, like based on what I know.
I was glad to hear this is just an exercise and that there is a backup.
Yes. I guess that's fair.
This is the reason, this conversation right here, folks, is the reason why I've always been so fanatic about backup, because backup is easy. Recovery is hard to next to impossible and very expensive.
Yes. 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 Yep. But you can try it with the free versions of these, like for this, for this exercise, you get to try it and learn and prepare yourself for the day when disaster does strike. Cause disaster is going to strike all of us, you know, in some way, shape, or form at some point in time, so long as we use computers long enough, right? It's not an if, it's a when.
It's when.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah.
So, learning about these options and being sort of prepared for them says, okay, well, we have an oopsie moment. Now we know what to do. So, yep. Fun stuff. I love this.
Yeah.
Where are we here? I want to take a minute and do what I call in the agenda show business, which is thanking all of you who have contributed to our premium program, which you can learn about and if you choose, participate in at MacGeekab.com/premium. It's like our own version of Patreon because we created things here before Patreon existed and I wasn't smart enough to think, hey, maybe, Adam, we should like package this up and sell it to other people. But that's okay. It's all fine. It is not mandatory. It is absolutely optional. And it is also very much a part of what makes this show possible. And for all of those reasons, and simply for the fact that so many of you choose to share some of your hard-earned cash with us, we are so thankful for it. So with that, I want to thank the following people for their $10 contributions that have come in the last few weeks. Let's see. Wagner in Allen, Bill with an APO box, Gary in Babylon, Scott in Bourbonnais, Jason in Charlestown, Chris in Chorleywood, Robert in Columbiana, Mark in Coopersburg, Stephen in Costa Mesa, Barry in Des Plaines, Jeremiah in Edgewater, Kevin in Edison, Donald in Furlong, Warren in Gloucester, Nick in Marquette, James in Melbourne, Corey in Midlothian, Santiago in Palm City, Stephen in Plainfield, Jonathan in Plainsboro, Michael in Robbins, Cal in Russellville, James in San Antonio, easy for me to say, Abel in Santa Rosa, Phil in Summers, Brian in Southbury, Frank in Tunbridge, Mark in Vero Beach, John in Vienna, Frank in Voorhees, John in Wake Forest, Neil in West Hartford, and Timothy in West Windsor. Thanks to each of you for your $10 contributions. Thanks to Bob in Lepesh for a $15 contribution. Thanks to Robert in Austin and Troy in Gardner for $20 contributions. Thanks to the following people for $25 contributions. That would be Mikhail in Altadena, Michael in Attleboro, Anthony in Chicago, Timothy in Coralville, Stephen in Columpton. Oh, I like saying that. That's fun. Columpton. Larry in Irvine, Javier in Jacksonville, Richard in Melbourne, someone without a name in Orlando. That's interesting to me. How did that happen? Peter, thank you, nameless person. Peter in Oslo, Brent in Philadelphia, Stacy in Pine Valley, Tim in St. Augustine, David in Stillwater, and John in Ypsilanti. Thank you for your $25 contributions. Thanks to Andrew in North Glen and Rob in Sorumsand for $30 contributions. And thanks to Chuck in Boulder, Stanley in Catonsville, and Jeff in Germantown for your $50 contributions. Thanks to all of you. You all rock. And with that, you want to take us to Cool Stuff Found, Pete?
I can do that, but I want to see if you can't share money with us, share the show with other people.
Thank you for saying that. Right? Yeah, for sure. Yep.
So, and man, it must be hard to get around without a name, but that was cool. Thank you. You can't get on airplanes. You can't do anything.
I know. Speaking of airplanes, Pete, I was talking before about sometimes I spoil myself with extra leg room on the plane. What can I get an extra leg room seat? Can I reserve an extra legroom seat for our trip to Macstock that's coming up?
I'm going to give you a window seat up front, brother. and the seat's adjustable. The just seat, like your car. I'll go back.
Just like, that's right. Yeah. So we are.
Get there.
I think we said it in the last show, but if we didn't, Pete and I were flying your Grumman Tiger, right, out to Macstock from New Hampshire here. Yeah. So. Yeah.
And after that trip, she's going in the paint shop. So.
Oh. Ooh. Wait, does that mean we can have fun at Macstock and like paint her up a little bit for 5 minutes before?
Oh, sure.
Sure.
There we go.
That'll be one event. I'll tell Mike to put it on the schedule. We'll go to the airport 2 miles away and paint Pete's plane. That'll be a blast.
Make it an art plane.
Right? Yeah, well, thinking of that, though, so I'm going to put some Tiger Nose Art on it, and I used Dolly to help me come up with Tiger Nose Art. I'm stoked. It looks nice. I told it to give me a tiger breaking out of the cowling, and so there's metals all torn away, and the tiger's here, and its claws and teeth. I'm stoked. Even the guy at the paint shop was like, oh, that's cool.
That's cool.
I can do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And if you are, if you haven't yet registered for MacStock, use code MacGeekGab and you save $30. So
nice.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Hey, so on to cool stuff found. Wacom was kind enough to send me a 13 touch pen display. And I have, between moving and a couple other things and my own self-inflicted stupidity wounds, I was having trouble getting it up and running. Well, finally last night I went back and I went through everything piece by piece and I got it running. So for those of you with Macs and think this may be hard, don't let that discourage you from going with the 113, and I'll talk more about that in a future show. So far, I really like it. The matte screen on it is great. The pen is responsive. But what I was looking for was a way to use it to its maximum, and I couldn't find anything because their videos all showed everybody using Photoshop. Well, Pete doesn't have Photoshop, and I'm like, okay, what am I going to do? So I went into Set App, and I said, hey, what's a good drawing program? What? And it came up with Tayasui Sketches. That's T as in Tango, A-Y-A, S as in Sierra, U-I. Tayasui Sketches. Comes right with Set App, put it in there, and literally in seconds, I had selected a pen, I had selected a color and the palette, and I was off to drawing. I had a toucan up there, and it was great. It was amazing little drawing tool. Draw anything that your artistic heart desires.
Did you draw both cans at the same time or one at a time?
Yeah, well, the top can on his beak and then the bottom can on his beak there, right? Toucan Sam. So, yeah.
Cool.
So, Tayasui Sketches was a fun little program I didn't know existed until I needed something to make this one touch 113 touch monitor come to life. And so both are cool stuffs found. I'll talk more about the monitor, like I say, in the weeks ahead, but that was fun. So, and thank you to Wacom for all, they were super supportive when I wrote to them and said, look, I'm not getting it. Something's wrong here. They were real helpful. So they want it to be a good experience for you.
Tayasui Sketches is also great on iPad and iOS with an Apple Pencil. And it's really, really good.
Nice. Interesting. All right. Cool. Great. I have been, well, to say playing would be 100% accurate, but sounds weird when you're talking about vacuums. I have been playing with, really using, some of the more upscale vacuums lately, specifically the Roborock Q Revo and the Anker S1 Pro. The Anker S1 Pro is brand new. The Q Revo has been out for a little while. Both of these are vacuums with what I will call fully functioning docks and also mops, right? So this is, you know, the Cadillac range of, you know, robot vacuums and mops. They both have water tanks in the base, and I say tanks. You want a clean water tank and a dirty water tank. And I need to tell you how important it is that these two and any robot vacuum you choose to get have a dirty water tank that seals extremely well. And the reason that I know that it seals extremely well is that after letting it run for a month and realizing, oh, I need to like refill the clean water tank and dump the dirty water tank, I opened the dirty water tank and I almost had to move out of my house. The smell was so bad, but it was like, wait a minute, this has been living in my living room for a month and we never noticed how bad and putrid this was. I mean, think about it. It's like old mop water It's mop water, which is bad enough to begin with, and then it's old, right? But it's
now
fine.
Now it's a science experiment.
Yeah, exactly. But really, like, dumped it out. I mean, I noticed the smell when I was dumping it out for both of these. But then, you know, you seal it back up. I mean, the smell goes away. Like, we didn't actually have to move. It wasn't like I had opened a can of Surstroming, which then explodes and, you know, fills your walls, and then you really do have to move. Only ever opens or Surstroming outside, and preferably with clothes that you don't care about. And it also doesn't, I don't prefer the taste of Surstroming. So they both have the mop tanks. They have different style mops on them, but both of them have the capability of lifting the mop when it comes over carpet. And that I find really important, because you don't want the mop getting your carpet wet, but you also don't want all the carpet stuff kind of getting up in the mop. So it's important for two reasons. The Curevo has flat spinning mops. They kind of look like they are little discs of mops that are underneath, of course, the unit, and the mops spin in opposite directions to really kind of get stuff. And that's how this works. The Curevo cleans the mop when it's back at the base, and the base unit has a way of rinsing the mop out. The Anker S1 Pro. It's from Anker. It's the Eufy S1 Pro. My apologies, but Eufy is an Anker company. The way their mop works is it is a roller brush, and I'm trying to find a picture of it, but I can't quickly here. It is a roller brush that is cleaned as part of the mopping process. So it's spraying water down onto the mop while it's cleaning. And we had an issue. Our dog knows when we get a new robot vacuum. It strategically, most of the time, these robot vacuums are awesome at avoiding dog poop on the floor, but sometimes they're not. And our dog knows when we've gotten a new robot vacuum and will poop on the floor in just the right spot.
Just to help.
Yeah. In just the right spot, so that the vacuum or whatever will not avoid it. And of course that happened right after we set up the Eufy S1 Pro. And the first thing I will say is that this thing is really easy to clean. I've had it with vacuums that are not easy to clean, and I threw one away in a tantrum one morning. I'll admit to it. That was a while ago, but you know, it happens. But this one, not only was it easy for me to sort of clean, it wasn't fun, mind you, but it was easy. It took about 20 minutes to kind of get everything out and get the vacuum back to a point where I trusted it to, like, vacuum.
Not spread more.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. But the next time I had it mopped, man, after that, the mop looked brand new. So this cleaning of the mop really, like, it's good. It's a good feature for these things to have. And then lastly, they're all app controlled and all of that stuff. And they both have fantastic mapping. It just works beautifully. And you can say, okay, this floor should be mopped, this floor not mopped. And it's like, you know, the whole deal. And you can obviously schedule it however you want. Both of these have what I will call the new style of roller, which is the rubber rollers, and this is for the vacuum to pull the stuff up into the vacuum. The rubber rollers that do not just coil up all the hair that is on the floor, which has been a problem with the sort of brush based rollers that have existed in robot vacuums for a long time. That's perhaps one of the most important features. If you're going to get a new robot vacuum, get the one with the rubber roller, not rubber molars. Those are for your mouth. And I also don't recommend that. The prices on these, they're not, you know, these are the Cadillacs of vacuums. The Curevo's been in the market for a while. Its list price is $899. I saw it last week for $769 on Amazon. The Eufy S1 Pro is brand new. Its retail price is $1499, but it will come down. That said, I like the S1 Pro better than the Q Revo simply because of the mopping, the active brush cleaning or the active mop cleaning. And it also has soap that you put in there. It's their own soap. So, you know, you're going to keep paying them to buy soap, but you are actually putting like it chooses how to mix it all. But yeah. So anyway.
Can you tell what kind of soap it is if you wanted to try and substitute?
It's in its own container. Like yeah. it's a custom. I don't know.
Gotcha.
Maybe somebody will come out with something. And I don't know. I should have looked before we did this to what the soap costs. But yeah, there you go. So, yep.
I don't think if you're dropping 15 Benjamins on it, you care what the soap costs.
Correct.
Just saying.
Yeah, that's right. My guess is it's going to settle in at about 1,000. Pete would be the right price for this thing. In the less expensive department, Adam, you got a cool stuff found for us before we leave? Oh,
I do. It's a bell. And you get one of these successes for, it's just a service bell, about $4.99. And the reason I have this thing, we were talking at the top of the show before we started recording. So I work as a web developer and, a guy I was working with mentioned that he would celebrate his small successes. So in coding, it's usually you're stuck on some sort of problem and you get through it or whatever. But this is just a general cool thing. And he sent it as a gift. It was a surprise. And then told me this story about, it was really fun. Anytime, you know, somebody would have a small success at work in the cubicles, you know, you'd hear a ding and then, you know, everybody could kind of celebrate the success and just, it's just a good thing for life. So it's just a little bell that sits on my desk. And anytime I have a little life success or something, you ring it and kind of celebrate it. And even by yourself, it works great. And I think it's like $4.99 on Amazon. Like it's a simple little thing, but good reminder that, you know, oftentimes I think in life we can get kind of caught up in negative stuff, but you know, celebrate your small wins. And this is just a little mechanism to kind of do that, which I thought was pretty cool.
I love that. I'm definitely going to get one of those. I you can certainly approximate this or even do it like with the bell that we do here on the show. Right. I don't know why I know why that's. Yeah, there it is. Thanks, Pete. But having a bell, like having a physical device that is purpose built for this at the ready, you don't have to like launch an app and like bring the thing, you know, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a fun little thing. So go out and celebrate your small wins, folks, because we all deserve it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Pete, I'm going to get one of these, obviously, as I said, and I'm going to get some double-sided tape. And I'm going to stick it in your plane, right on the dash. And every time while we're flying that you do something that's like, good, I'll just hit the bell.
We get the clearance we want.
Yeah. And, ding. Yeah. There you go. That's right. Pete will arrive solo at MacStock and me and the bell will be left somewhere.
No, Dave, you don't need the seatbelt on when I open the canopy, Dave. You're fine. Which is one of the cool things about the Tiger. You can fly with the canopy open.
Huh, yeah. That's interesting. If you promise to keep the canopy closed, I promise not to ring the bell.
Oh, there you go. Well, I'm going to make you talk on the radio, though, so bring your radio voice.
Okay, I'll bring my radio voice. That'll be fun. Yeah. I really look forward to this. I think it's going to be fun. Yeah.
So am I.
Great. Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. And come see us at MacStock. All three of us will be there. Adam's coming from the opposite direction, so he won't be flying in Pete's plane. He'll be driving in his vehicle, I believe.
Yeah. And Barry and I may be talking about bringing some virtual reality devices, let's just say.
Ooh. Oh, fun. All right. And
having those for people to play around with. So if you haven't had a chance to try a Vision Pro, maybe an opportunity for you.
Cool. And we will
be... I still haven't done that even at the Apple Store. I need to do that.
Oh, it is fun. Yeah, the demo's good. And we will be doing a live Mac Geek Gab from MacStock. It will be on Friday night. And I probably should have cleared this with Mike before I said it, but I'm pretty sure it's open to everyone that's attending MacStock. Like there's the pass that gets you the Friday daytime workshops. That's a separate, I mean, it's an add-on thing that you pay a little extra for, so that you can get access to these workshops. The Mac Geek Gab thing at night, I believe, is included in the standard MacStock pass. But get there, you know, we're going to be there. Our plan is to be there Thursday night. I think all three of us hope to be there by Thursday night and then just kind of be there through the whole thing. So, get the Friday pass and, you know, enjoy that. And then we'll do Mac Geek Gab after dinner on Friday night. And then the sessions start. They go Saturday and Sunday. And I think there's all kinds of, I think there's a karaoke thing that Kelly Gamont is trying to put together, and I think will put together for Saturday night. So, yeah, knowing that, Kelly.
Yeah, that will happen.
That will happen. Right. Yeah, exactly. And the cool part about MacStock this year, one cool part about MacStock this year is that it's all at one place. The hotel is the conference center. There's a restaurant, there's a bar. So, hopefully that camp vibe of MacStock will perhaps expand even more. So come see us there. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks to our sponsors for providing all the sponsorships that we had. Fastmail.com/MGG and ZocDoc.com/MGG. Thanks to CashFly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. And thanks to you for listening. As Pete said earlier, please, my three words are going to be share the show. Adam, do you have three words?
Don't get caught.
Made on a Mac. See ya.
Later.